Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. In this episode of the Radio Today programme, we have Howard Hughes paying tribute to Radio Clyde's Alex Dixon. Plus, Howard shares his thoughts on stuff going on in radio this week and plays the role of both VO and Quizmaster in Stu vs. Roy. We'll take you to Norwich, where Emma Corsham talks to speakers at the Student Radio Association annual conference. Plus, there's James Cridland's thoughts on station swag, and in David Lloyd's Radio Moments, Dave Berry leaves Capital and Beacon launches, and there are memories of Radio Tweed and Great North Radio.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
First, though, we start the show with a look at some of the big stories in the industry this week. And to talk through them, I'm joined, as always, by the Radio Today founder and editor, Roy Martin. Hello, Mr. Roy.
Hi, Stuart. This is going okay, isn't it? We've had a couple of people say they like this new format, which yes. I wasn't expecting at all.
Ye of little faith. New format thing, we have with us a guest or guest each week, friend of the show, and an IPDT. It's an IPDTL virgin until Ooh. Just a few minutes ago. Yes, it's the radio news legend on the line, Howard Hughes.
Well, I don't know about legend, but it's very nice. But it is amazing, isn't it? IPDTL, I've been investigating for a while. This is the first chance to try it. And the three of us are at opposite ends of the nation, but we're connected now.
And it sounds like we're in the same place. Magic.
Yes, very good, very good.
Great. Well, thanks for being with us, Howard. We've got lots to talk about over the next few minutes. And we're going to start with some sad news this week. We learned of the death of Alex Dixon, former MD at Radio Clyde, head of programming and head of news before that, responsible for launching a number of well-known broadcasters' careers, including Jackie Bird, Ross King, Bill Turnbull, Paul Coyer. And he set up a training centre for journalists at Radio Clyde when he was head of news. And I know, Howard, you went up there to learn how to be a journalist.
I did, Stuart. I went full circle, really. And I was very trepidatious, very young, and frankly, not very good. I haven't even improved in all those years. But I went up on the Radio Clyde training course, where there were people from all over the country. So you would literally see people from the north of Scotland, down to what they used to call 210, from Reading, and all over the country there were people there. There were people there from Hereward Radio in Peterborough. And we all went up there to learn the Clyde way of doing things. Now, the Clyde way of doing things was very much inherited from Alex Dixon, because Alex was reputed to be, and I think he was, the highest-ranking territorial army officer in Scotland. So it was all run by the numbers. There was a form for everything, a procedure for everything that you did. And the idea was to teach us a, what do they call it, a systems approach to broadcasting. Now, this was the 1980s. Nobody'd heard of such a thing. And most of the other stations had evolved their own ways of doing stuff. We had at Radio City, where, I was first employed, and they had their systems there that were probably more methodical and more controlled than anywhere else. So it was a remarkable learning experience. Alex and I think we hit it off from the very beginning. He was a remarkable guy. He would be most days wearing a blazer, perfectly pressed shirt, wonderful tie. One of the tests, though, that we had as journalists was to be sent out with a recorder to do an interview. And little did I know that the recorder that I was sent out with had been given Duff batteries. So that was the test. And I thought, okay, well, I've only got a certain number of minutes to do this interview, get out there and make it done. So what can I do? And I swapped the recorder that I'd been given. Clyde, I think, were one of the first to use Marantz recorders, cassette recorders, for interviews for news. So I went to the newsroom, swapped this knobbled recorder that I'd been given to test me for one of the reporter's machines. But I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody I'd done that. So out I go, do my interview, and I come back, and Alex is there, and the head of news is there, and everybody's there saying, a very serious matter, one of our machines has disappeared here now, and I had to come clean. And Alex gave me a bit of a ticking off, only a nice one, but there was a little twinkle in his eyes, because he realised that I'd beaten the system. I discovered that the recorder had been knobbled. I handled it in a slightly unorthodox way, like much of the rest of my career, but unfortunately their own reporter, and I think it was a very nice lady called Duffy. Duffy had gone out with a machine that wasn't working. She hadn't checked. How embarrassing is that? Whoops. But one night we all went to a pub in Socky Hall Street. It was a marvellous experience. We had a really good night. And at the time, I was very young, and I was trying to be terribly, awfully like this, because I'd come from Liverpool, and my father had a thick Liverpool accent, and I think it had given me a bit of a complex about it. So I went completely the other way when I was very young, and became terribly BBC World Service, and awfully like this. It was ridiculous. Alex leant across the bar and said, "Laddie, you've got a good voice. Be yourself, laddie." And I realised at that point I was just being stupid. And so I started backing away from it and realised that I had to be more me, and I would be more successful if that's the way I was. So I worked on it, and I've got him to thank for it. Then years later, of course, they invited me to go back in my Capital Radio days to train them, which was another marvellous experience. Alex Dixon, very special man, somebody who played a big part in my career. There are four important people in my career. John Perkins, former head of IRN, Terry Smith, still the boss of Radio City, Richard Park, of course, and Alex Dixon, and he will be missed.
Yeah, we've had some other tributes as well. Graham Bryce from Bowers called him an inspirational broadcaster, influential leader, and one of the key figures in the growth of commercial radio, and Phil Riley as well, another radio exec, said it was a really sad day for commercial radio in the UK. He says Alex was a hero of his, always delightful company to be with, and wrote me innumerable notes over the years that I still have and treasure. He will be missed. And I know you kept in touch with him as well, Howard, long after going up to see him that first time.
I did. I mean, in those years, he once tried to poach me to go from Capital up to Radio Clyde, and I seriously considered it, because I would have loved to have worked with him. It was a marvellous atmosphere there that he had. And he always used to sign letters and emails with the phrase, "Yours, I, A-Y-E. And I looked that up. I never quite knew what it meant. I looked it up today, and it means "yours always." So from all of us who appreciated you, Alex Dixon, yours, I, we'll be seeing you one day.
Absolutely. Sorely missed, I'm sure, by everybody who worked with and knew him. Let's move on to some of the other stories making the headlines on radio today this week. Roy, some big changes at Radio 1 coming. Grimmy, Clara and Greg James all getting Fridays off.
Yeah. Somebody wrote on the Radio Today comments that a young Chris Evans has just got very jealous because, of course, he asked for Fridays off and didn't last very long after that at Radio 1. I'd love to see how that idea started, because it's one of those things that you think to yourself, can't believe nobody's done that before. And I wonder if it started by them maybe looking at Greg James hosting the chart show, thinking, well, that doesn't really sit very well. Should we change Friday afternoon, start the weekend early? Oh, why not just start the weekend on Friday morning? And I wonder what happened.
Greg does his TV show on a Friday night as well on BBC One now, doesn't he? So that's possibly something to do with it.
Maybe that's where it started.
You know, I think there's a lot to be said for it. If you look at one of the places that I work at the moment, BBC Radio Berkshire, they have a completely different feel to things on a Friday. So you have on BBC Berkshire, Tony Blackburn on Fridays only, opening the gate to your weekend. And I filled in for Tony last Friday. And there is a completely different feel to it. I think there's a logic to separating Friday and almost making it the staging post for the weekend.
And it's something you can probably do now that you couldn't have done 20 years ago, because working patterns and things have changed quite a lot.
That's true. You know, it is true. I think the whole view of Friday is different. The whole way that people work anyway, and the whole way that people use radio is different. So I don't think there's a particular problem with this. I think it could turn out to be quite groundbreaking.
I've had Fridays off for years as well, so I'm in favour of it.
What about Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday and Monday as well, I understand?
Anything that ends in a Y, I have it off, so to speak.
An interesting tweet of the week in E-Radio this week from Danny Baker. He says, he tweeted the other night, "Good evening, BBC Radio 2. Isn't it strange? I am a 10-time Sony Gold radio winner with extensive experience in music, one of the most revered broadcasters of his time, with a massive record collection, yet you won't touch me with an effing barge pole and hire TV celebs instead." Ooh. Should Danny Baker have a better gig than the gig he already has, is the question this week?
No.
Well, with an attitude like that, you can perhaps see why Radio 2 haven't given him a show, but yeah, there we are.
Maybe you should join United DJs.
I've been listening over this week to United DJs, and I think they've made a very confident start. I wasn't sure what to expect. I know Mike Reed pretty well, and Tony Prince, so I didn't think it would be a problem. I thought that it would probably gel together quite well. And I've liked what I've heard. I've thought the music selection's been quite inspired on most of the shows. Good sound quality, very important to me. They seem to have got what is really hard to achieve, I think, online or on DAB, indeed. They seem to have the processing right. The only thing that I would do differently, maybe, I think they could have been a bit more adventurous with the jingles. I think they could maybe have recreated some of the old Radio 1 jingles and got a little bit more action going there. But that's a very small thing.
That's a very big thing for us.
You just wanted jam on there, didn't you?
Well, I did. Or TM or anything like that, really.
No, I heard DLT on Saturday. Heard DLT on Saturday morning. I thought it was well pitched. And thought he did all right, actually. Something else we've been covering this week is the new Naked podcast from Jenny and Kat at Radio Sheffield. They're doing this series all about body image and nudity and recording it naked. Do we approve of nakedness in a studio if you put a towel down first?
Roy?
I think this is one activity in a studio which engineers will approve of.
Stuart, how have you checked your broadcast, your essential law for journalists recently? Just in case we start naming names.
Check the webcams off.
I think we've all heard the stories of people who've indulged themselves in various ways in studios over the years. Naked radio, I'm not so sure about this. I nearly had to go naked with my colleagues from Capital Radio more than a few years ago. We did the Chris Tarrant show from a Caribbean cruise, and Chris tended not to do things that would be either humiliating or involve personal risk to life or limb. I got to do those, okay? So the one particular thing I got to do on that cruise was I had a full body session in their full makeover suite with a beauty therapist. And the idea would be, or was, that I should be covered head to toe in seaweed and then massaged a bit. And they said, you know, you're quite all right about doing this naked. I said, I am not going nude in front of my colleagues, thank you very much, because they'll be talking about it all year. So they gave me a pair of paper panties to wear, okay? And the whole piece ends, and the piece was called Howard's Paper Panties, and it became the most requested item on the Chris Tarrant breakfast show ever in years to come. They played it on my last day there. I was wearing these paper panties and lying with my face down, and I'm feeling this massage, and the last words on this are, hey, Helly, you know those fingers that you've been feeling knuckling your back? They're mine! And it ends with me screaming. I must dig that out one of those days, but Howard's paper panties.
Yeah.
That impression of Chris is great.
Yes.
We'll do our best.
Chris's lad, Toby, got a new show this week. He's moving to mid-mornings on Radio X. I think that's a good move, Roy.
Yeah, definitely. He's worked his way up the ranks, hasn't he, at Radio X, and he's sounding good. So, yeah, good promotion.
He's very, very comfortable with it. I think he does the videos very, very well on Radio X. You know, Moyles is such a good performer on the video. And I think Toby is as well. Of course, I knew Toby when he was a little boy. But then I knew everybody when they were a little boy.
Did you think his dad encouraged him to go into radio, or did it just kind of happen?
And knowing his dad, I don't think his dad would have. No, I don't think so. I mean, all the kids are doing different things.
Two of them are in radio. So.
Well, you know, Fear. Fear's good, and Fear's been doing some radio over the years. Toby's turned out to be very good, and I'm very jealous because he does a much better impression of his dad than I do. Although he's still trying.
The British Podcast Award nominees out this week as well. Two nominations for Ed Miliband for his podcast with Jeff Lloyd. One of them is up against Jeff's other podcast, Adrift with Annabelle Port, as well. These are going to be handed out on the 19th of May. And there is a Listener's Choice Award being given out at the Podcast Awards as well, where people can vote for their favourite podcast online. You can pick any UK podcast and vote for it, and it could be crowned the Listener's Choice. Howard, I know you're a big fan of some podcasts. Tell us what you've been listening to.
Well, one of those in particular, the Ed and Jeff podcast, is produced by my former talk radio producer Emma Corsham, who's a real hard-working person, and if anybody deserves success, she does. I mean, we followed the genesis of that podcast. She used to tell me about how it was developing from the very beginning, so I would kind of like her to win. So Emma, if you're listening to this, I'm right behind you. And apart from that, my other favorite podcast is my own, The Unexplained. Which can be found on theunexplained.tv, or indeed can be found on iTunes, Podbay, and various other
And portals. Is this a podcast of your talk radio show, or is it a separate podcast?
No, I mean, look, I have maybe a unique position in that I had a radio show called The Unexplained on TalkSport. Joined TalkSport after LBC when I'd been on the Ferrari show for 2 years. And Ferrari helped me to get into TalkSport. Thank you, Nick. And they said to me, would you like to do a show here? What kind of show would you like to do? So I pitched this idea for a show about science, space, the paranormal, ghosts, all that sort of stuff. And Kelvin McKenzie, who was running TalkSport at the time, said, do it. You know, do the show. So I went and did the show for 2 years. Then, of course, the station moved towards All Sport. And they said, OK, Howard, well, your show's ending, but we'll see you here again. And then my listeners started saying to me, don't let your show die. Turn it into a podcast. Stuart, you'll remember this. It was 2006 because we were working together then.
We were. Is that 12 years ago already?
It's blimey. That many years, Stuart. So I went away, learned how to make podcasts. Learned, and as you know, Stuart, became totally obsessive about compression, microfixes, and all the rest of it over that period. The podcast ran for 10 years, and indeed I got the call. Talk Radio was being set up by the Wireless Group, and they said, would you like to bring your show back? So now I think I'm the only person to have had a radio show that became a podcast that is now a podcast and a radio show. And it's all called the same thing. And the two shows are slightly different, but the podcast is standalone, has an international audience all over the world. People, they seem to like it. And the radio show is building too, which is marvellous. So it's, I think it's, unless there's anybody else who's done that, I think that's probably unique.
Well done. We're going to play our little geek quiz in a minute. First, though, Roy, tell us what's coming up in the next week and the next few weeks.
In the radio world, yes. Events coming up. One Voice Conference, which we haven't mentioned on the podcast before, but that's taking place in London. Peter Dixon is behind that, or one of the people behind it. If you don't know anything about it, if you do anything with voiceovers or production, Google it and go, because it looks fantastic. And also Radio Audio Week is coming up next month. The Radio Centre Tuning In Conference, the Podcast Awards, which we just talked about, the Radio Festival, the Real World Radio Academy 30 Under 30 launch, and much more will all be part of that Radio Audio Week in the middle of May.
Fantastic. Right. Time to play Stu versus Roy. 3 weeks into it, I think I'm winning so far. We don't have any imaging or jingles still. In fact, while we got Howard here, should we be cheeky and ask to use his big showbiz voice? Could you do us a drop, Howard, and then we can clip it and use it every week?
It's the game that everybody's talking about. Yes, it's the Geek of the Week, Stu versus Roy.
Yeah, that'll do. We'll put some production music on.
Well, you know.
So here's how it works. Howard has got some questions for us. He will ask them. We will shout out our name. First person to shout their name can answer the question, and we'll see who gets the most right and who's this week's Geek of the Week. So, Howard, hit us with your questions.
Oh, I've got a feeling, Clarkson, you are going to get these, but let's see. Question
I think
one.
He will.
Should we do the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? No, we won't do that.
But
who
can I
were
call a friend?
You can if you must, but that is a gesture of defeat, though. Okay, question one. Who were the breakfast team on LBC before Nick Ferrari? I know, because I was there.
Jeez.
It was Howard Hughes and I don't know, actually.
Oh, yeah, I can
I probably wrote about it.
Yeah, Nick took over in 2004, didn't he?
He did.
So it would be I'm going to have to give up on that one. I'll kick myself.
It was Jane Moore and John Nicholson. John Nicholson, yes. Of course, who is back now on Sundays on Talk Radio.
Okay, Howard wins that one then. He defeated us.
Okay, this one I think you both will get, but let's see. Who was the ex-Radio London, that's the Pirate Radio London, Radio 1, and Top of the Pops DJ known all over the world in the 1980s as being the host of BFBS UK?
Stu.
Okay.
Kid Jensen.
Very near, because the two of them work together. Do you want another try?
I think I know who it is then. Roy?
No.
John Peel?
No. Maybe I was a little obtuse with that clue. I'll give you one more clue. His on-air name for himself, his nickname for himself, referred to another broadcast medium, as in TV on radio.
Tommy... Go on, Roy.
Just because you nearly said it as well. Tommy Vance, of course.
It was the great Tom. Greatest inspiration to me there's ever been. The Voice. Okay, question three now. Who was Capital's flying eye commander on the Chris Tarrant show?
Stu. Russ Kane.
Yes, it was Russ Boy.
Yes,
Russ Boy, if you're listening.
Yes.
Got your name check. And we're all still in contact. So Cara Noble, Russ Kane and me.
So it's one all now between us. Have you got a final deciding question?
All right. Now, we've all got northern leanings. I'm from the northwest. Roy, are you from the northwest as well?
I am indeed. Originally. Can you tell?
Well, no, I just, you know. And I'm from Liverpool, God's own country. So the last one is about Liverpool. Liverpool radio legend Billy Butler. Beat me, Billy Butler on Radio City, Radio Merseyside. Shared the spotlight with his producer on both Radio City and on Radio Merseyside. Who was that producer?
These are the guys that played Hold Your Plums, is that right?
That's it. They took it from Radio City across to Radio Merseyside.
And then back again.
Yep.
Yeah, I know the name, but it's gone. I'm useless at this.
Well, maybe just the questions were too hard. Who knows? But do you want me to tell you?
Go on then.
Well, the way that Bill used to say it, he used to say, BB and Wally on City.
Oh,
it was Wally Scott.
Wally Scott. Do you know what? I think because Howard beat us on two questions, it means Howard is Geek of the Week.
Well so done, Howard. Probably
geek of any year you care to mention. But I'm sorry for making the question so hard there. But, you know, it's a lifetime of radio.
There will have been people listening to the podcast shouting at the radio, even though it's not a radio, but they will have been shouting
it.
That's what this quiz is
probably
all about.
Shouting. Get that Howard Hughes off. We've successfully kept him off for years. What's he doing reappearing now?
Oh, well, thanks for coming on, Howard. It's lovely to catch up with you, and nice to hear your memories of Alex as well earlier in the podcast.
Well, no, look, being, you know, serious for half a second, Alex was a huge figure in my career, gave me the best advice I ever heard, and I'm still really in shock. He was a good man.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Yes, thank you to Mr. Radio News, Howard Hughes. What a voice that guy has. Now, we're heading to Norwich next, where last week, student radio folk from all across the UK headed for the annual SRA conference at the UEA. Emma Corsham was there for Radio Today, and she caught up with a variety of speakers, starting with the One Extra breakfast presenter, Dottie.
One Extra has got a real benefit of being we're a national station, over a million listeners, so we have a big audience, but at the same time, we're not mainstream. So because of that, we don't have to follow mainstream rules. We get a mainstream size audience, but we're still quite specialist in what we do. So because of that, we can do a lot that is cultural. We can do we just played 2 days ago, we had like a drama that was set to garage music, and it was like a piece of drama on the radio, where you probably wouldn't get that anywhere else, but we have that freedom to do things that are slightly more specialist. And in doing that, we don't have to have these polished presentery presenters that have come from the world of TV. We can take a chance on somebody that's come from Represent Radio, or take a chance on someone like me who was a rapper that had never done a radio show before, because these are real voices that care about what we're talking about, as opposed to just getting someone in that's going to just sound super, super chipper at 6 a.m. in the morning. And I think we're in a great position to be able to do that, because it's about more than just getting the music out, because we're not just trying to be a pop music mainstream station. I think we can take chances that other stations can't.
Yeah, and there seems to be like more of a clear progression that quite a few people are going from One Extra over to Radio One and doing specialist shows there as
well. With One Extra, it's become a bit of a breeding ground for things that begin specialist and go on to become mainstream. So if you look at pop music now, it's Rams Barking, it's Stormzy, it's Steph London. So many things that would have been considered maybe a few years ago specialist One Extra music is top 10. It's charting. Your Young Banes are charting notes. Addison Lee is a pop song. And because these are things that were born on the station, so Stormzy did his listening party with me. Addison Lee by Notes started off as a is this a gas or trash, like a little feature that we do where we play songs on Charlie Slough's show and people say if it's good or bad. That's where Addison Lee started. The first time it was played and people said it was good, went on to become Notes, Addison Lee. Because these people started specialist and become mainstream, it works exactly the same way for the talent. We are considered specialist voices, but what we're doing has been so embraced by the mainstream that you can get someone like me who does the One Extra Breakfast Show co-hosting a mainstream music show on a Friday night.
That's amazing. Well, so well done for that.
Thank you.
Well, you were a big radio listener before.
Yes, yeah, so I've always listened to radio, but never imagined it would be a career. It's just not even that I didn't want to do it, it just never crossed my mind. And I think because of that, it's made me a presenter that's not a presenter. Because I think you can do student radio, community radio, hospital radio, and you're so consumed by radio that you're learning how to radio. This is how I do radio. And it can make you almost too competent.
In the home of Alan Partridge right here. It's about stripping it back and having a conversation.
Yeah, and it's like, I think because I didn't come from that background, when I faded the mic up, I was just talking. Like I was talking to my mates. And I think it's been a real help to know how radio works because I've listened to radio and I know how you're supposed to get through a show and I know that you have to play the music eventually. But I think because I wasn't so... I wasn't polished in that radio process. I think I just came at it from a different angle. Some people are like, I listen to radio. These are presenters, so this is what I've heard. So this is how I'm going to deliver because this is what a radio presenter is supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
Which is why on some commercial stations you can't tell who's on. I get that a lot. I'm like, who was that?
Because you have the same voice.
You just kind of have that voice. Yeah. That is the presenter voice.
That energetic in your ears.
But you go on One Extra and you know immediately who's on.
So I'm talking to Tim Johns, who was speaking about the time that Ed Miliband came in to cover for Jeremy Vine on Radio 2 and all the learnings and challenges of that. Is it a constant challenge in your programming meetings to go, we need to find a new way of doing this? Because it's kind of the... radio across the UK is having to cover the news. The news is always the news. So how do you do that without then just trying to be quirky about everything or like overly laboured on things?
It's a balance. I supposed I focused on focus as a way of making what you do distinct. I mean, you know, if I'm going to talk about our programme, we don't always actually put an angle on things. Sometimes a story is bigger than what you can possibly do to it. So sometimes if a terror attack has just happened, for example, as it has a couple of times in the last few years just before our programme, you know, that story tells itself. You don't need a funny question or an angle on that. You're just going to book guests with expertise who know what they're talking about to give us the latest, hear from eyewitnesses, and every other outlet's going to be doing the same thing, but that doesn't matter because you're telling the story for your audience. And I guess thirdly, sometimes a story is strange enough in itself that you just tell the story. So last week, what was it? We had a North Wales police had tweeted about a heron that had eaten a duckling, and a man got so annoyed at this that he killed the heron with a shotgun, cut the duckling out of its stomach and saved the duckling. And he received a police caution for that.
Call in now if you've ever heard this before.
I mean, sometimes we are knowingly just a little bit verging on Alan Partridge, but to do that story and then say, call us now if you ever shot a heron to save a duckling is unnecessary, clearly. I think the focus, anyone can do that. You just, if you can find the right guests to talk in an animated fashion about a topic, I think focus is brilliant, whatever you're talking about. You know, focus makes a conversation interesting and different. Being really, really broad can make it more predictable and same as everything else. So I love a bit of focus. The core thing that I have to remember every single day in my job is that Radio 2, for all we talk about social media and everything else, I mean, ultimately there are millions of people listening on FM and DAB radio live at the time, at work, in the kitchens, and so ultimately the weight of coverage for both of them is exactly the same. However, in social media, in traditional media, in the newspapers, Ed had far more impact, I think, for a number of reasons. A, he was first. B, we got, you know, if we're looking for coverage, lucky with a couple of things, like the death metal thing was just something you couldn't make up, you know. It was Ed Miliband, it was the lead singer of Napalm Death, which in that community is huge. It was fairly extraordinary, him trying to sing it. And Ed Miliband, you know, he's got a huge following on Twitter. Let's not forget, Ian Duncan Smith at the time, I don't even think was on Twitter. I mean, let's not forget the Millie fandom. He had all of that behind him, as well as a demographic who would traditionally favour Miliband over IDS. They're the ones on Twitter and so on, not the other way around. But again, for people listening, it was the same, and we did a lot of, you know, fun, good, interesting, serious stuff with IDS as well, which people who only saw it on social media don't even know about and won't remember.
When it comes to sort of cover for Jeremy Vine, two politicians, they're
they know what they're doing with speaking to the public a little bit. It's a little bit of a strange situation being in a studio where they're the main person instead of being sort of interviewed. Are there other people lined up for cover that wouldn't have come from that sort of public facing background, and how do you think they would cope?
Well, I don't want to say too much or too little, but I think it's entirely possible and even probable that in the future we will look to do similar out-of-the-box things. It might be with politicians again, it might be with other people. But as you say, there's something really special about, because we're not just offering like a guest editing slot where you sort of half curate the programme with ideas that you like. No, no, we're saying, you know, you're properly presenting it for a week as the host. And even for really famous people, actually that's not something they've ever done or that other networks really offer them with that audience. So I think it's exciting to think about the possibilities of who could do it. And whether they get more training, it depends where they come from. I mean, most people who are in entertainment or who are popular or famous for a reason, that often coincides with a certain degree of intelligence, confidence and, you know, ability to speak publicly. And you know, most people who we might think up to do it would probably be perfectly competent to give it a good go.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
And we're here with Lloydie of Nottingham, and you did a talk about how to be a good boss. Are you a good boss?
I'm not the person to ask that, really. You should probably ask the people who work for me, and I hope they'd give you lovely answers, but, you know, nobody's a perfect human, so I'm sure I've got room for improvement.
So what did you tell the students about how to be a good boss then? So there must be something that you've learned, otherwise it would have been a very quick session.
Well, the session was brilliantly facilitated by Mike Cass, and what we were trying to do really is relate our experience back to student radio so that it's useful for the people that are station managers at the moment at student stations. And, you know, a lot of it that came out of it was actually having people working together face-to-face. I mean, we live in a digital age at the moment where it's really easy to, you know, message a WhatsApp group about what you want them to do, you know, with their student shows, for example. And I think having that face-to-face conversation is super important, having that time where you can actually relate to another human being. Sometimes when we're so locked into our screens, it's something that we can easily forget, and it's really quick and easy to send off an email or message someone using an app. But when you actually sit down, look at someone in the eyes and have a real conversation, that's a great way to make them feel understood, to inspire them, and actually to get inspiration for yourself as well. And sometimes that'll make you alter your plans because, you know, you're reading lots of other emotional cues.
And is that something, when you were a presenter, was really important, is having those sort of sit-down snoop sessions, it just for an excuse to be able to get that FaceTime with a boss?
Yeah, definitely, because like when you're having some kind of, you know, an air check with a boss, it's not just the fact that they're reviewing your work, but it's also the fact that you get to sit down and be a human being with them. Because actually, if you're a boss, you've got to have the trust of the people that work with you. Well, if you're hardly ever in front of them face to face, you know, how are you going to have that trust? Bonds of trust are built through human contact.
Do you find lots of inspiration still from the students that you speak to or meet?
I was just having this conversation with some other people from the industry, and genuinely it's more inspiring every year because the standard keeps going up. And it's a bit of a cliche to say, well, the standard gets better every year, but it really does. People are having amazing ideas, and thanks to the developments in technology, they're able to articulate those ideas in new and brilliant ways. And because of the mentoring that goes on through the Student Radio Association and through links with industry, people's work is just incredible. And it makes me so excited for the future of radio.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with the students that you didn't manage to in your boss chat or in previous sessions where you've talked about improv as a great way of finding personal connection?
Actually, one big bit of advice that we kind of touched on today but maybe didn't spend as much time on as we could have done is have outside interests. Have at least one interest outside radio, because it's wonderful that you are a big radio enthusiast. However, you need to be able to talk about more than radio if you're going to crack open a mic or if you're going to generate ideas as a producer. You actually need something else in your life as well to be a rich, interesting human being. Have an outside interest. Have a few. it'll make you curious about the world, and as a result, you'll be a more interesting person to listen to on the radio.
So this is Dirk Maggs. You've just done a talk on the art of sound. Where's the sort of the line between looking at new tech and the kind of the old school, like piece of paper and an envelope for the sliding doors? And
well, whatever works, works. That's the thing. I have a lot of correspondence with people in America who do audio theatre or podcasting or whatever they call it, and they're lovely and they're fantastic and they're really, really keen. And they keep asking me, so what are the essential plugins I need and all of this stuff? And I'm saying, actually none, because that's not what you need to tell the story well. You can augment what you do with that. What we're in the business of is storytelling. I mean, if we're not in reportage, if this isn't talk radio or Radio 4 or TalkSport or wherever it is, if we're in the business of telling stories in sound, it's the story that comes first, whatever serves the story. And if at the end of the day a piece of paper in an envelope works as a sliding door and nobody questions it, or me going in the microphone sounds like Superman flying, hell, I'll use it. You know, if that's done the job, you can add more and more ingredients. And I use a lot of music and I use a lot of processed sound effects and I do use plugins. But the point is, it's got to start with a story. You can't start with what gear do I need. That actually isn't the important part. The important part is, how do I tell this story really excitingly and interestingly so that people believe her in the world of the characters, that the world of the characters exists around the characters? Because that's another thing people forget. And that is that, yeah, okay, they're in the starship above Jupiter, but you know, there might be other people on the starship. There might be somebody washing their socks in the sink on the starship. You know, you can add a lot of stuff in the detail that only comes out later on for the listener. And one of the things I try and do is do a story, but I also try and add little bits that on a second hearing you missed the first time. Because the fun of it is creating the world. When we did Superman or Batman, creating Metropolis or Gotham City, what does Metropolis sound like? Wow, that's great. You know, where at any point something should streak overhead and it's Superman, or it's playing with this lovely box of Lego and all the bits are in your head or are very simple to grab hold of. You don't need a spandex outfit to have a superhero in audio.
You're never thinking minimalist, just get on with the job. You're always adding as much as you can to sort of...
No, I'm always thinking minimalist, but I always end up doing everything I can. So yeah, no, I'm currently working on a third Alien project for Audible, and I keep thinking I wish there were less of the damn bugs, because each of them's got to be making a move, you know. I'd love to be minimalist, and there are times when it's wonderful to have two people talking for 5 minutes and to actually let the actors take the drama. But sometimes, you know, to create the convincing image, to get the believability, and a lot of what I do is using stereo and using the space of the mind and have people moving around, that involves a lot of match cutting sound effects and what have you, but it's worth it.
There was also another bit you showed us, recording on location. You needed a deader space, so you just sat in a car.
Yeah, because that's as dead an acoustic as you can find in a hurry. We were in a hurry, we only had a day to record this particular actress, so suddenly thought, well, sit in the car. And if you mic people close up, I mean, if you have a mic far away from people in the car, it sounds boxy. But if you really push it in close, there's not many reflective surfaces on a back seat if you stay away from the windows. So, you know, it's using your environment. Because the best studio you can get is the real world. And if you need a completely dead place, the car is a pretty dead place. You want to sound like a car, just pull the mic away from them a bit. But you want to make it sound like a dead acoustic, then just stick it up their nose, you know.
How often are you covering people with a duvet?
Not so much these days, no. But I, you know, occasionally when somebody tells me, well, we booked a studio, and I say, what have you booked? Oh, it's a really good music studio. I said, that's great, but you better buy some duvets and gaffer tape, because you're going to spend all day just killing the acoustic.
So there's still the retro sort of the option there of the egg boxes and the duvets and things.
Absolutely.
If you really need it.
Oh, I did a thing with Johnny Vegas about 12 years ago called Night Class, and we had to have an outdoor scene, and it was pouring with rain outdoors and we needed quiet outdoors. So we built a tent out of mic stands and duvets and put everyone in there. And they were supposed to be in a sculpture park, I beg your pardon. And we recorded them in this sort of 6-foot by 6-foot box.
That's quite the image as well. thank you so much for
talking
pleasure.
To us.
A real
pleasure. Yeah, and, thank you for coming.
We are in the sort of last few sessions of SRA Con held in Norwich or UEA. And I'm with Naomi, who's the chair of the SRA. How do you think it's gone this year?
I think it's gone really well this year. As an SRA team, we really wanted to explore diversity in terms of encouraging more industry people from ethnic minority backgrounds. We wanted more women in radio, just to empower our students a bit more this year. I went to the women's talk in the morning yesterday. I thought that was really good, really empowering, and it sort of celebrates women in radio as well as empowering students. And I think it was really good that we had a lot of men in the room as well, so we're teaching them, not just teaching them, but making them realise how important gender representation is.
Yeah, it was a really well attended session as well, which for first thing on the second morning of conference was really, really good to see. What would you like to see next conference, do you think?
I feel like next conference I want to try and get the members more together, more networking sessions between the members at the beginning of conference, because we've had a few people that have come on their own from their student radio stations, and I just want them to feel welcome, feel involved, and everyone to feel comfortable together, because it's a long 3 days and it's quite daunting for people to come on their own. So yeah, I want to encourage that a bit more. Networking, making people feel welcome and making people feel comfortable as well is the main thing next year.
Thank you, Emma. That's Emma Corsham for Radio Today at the SRA conference in Norwich. And you heard her talking to One Extra's ADOT, Radio 2's Tim Johns, Capital's Lloydie, comedy and drama producer Dirk Maggs, and SRA chair Naomi Oiku. David Lloyd takes us back in time shortly. First, though, some thoughts on radio station merch.
At james.crid.land, on the Radio Today podcast, and in your favourite podcast app, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, radio station swag. Last week I got a nice thing through the post. It's a very small piece of plastic with a tiny logo on it, and the cardboard it's attached to says that it's a webcam cover, and it appeared as if by magic the week after the big Facebook furore about privacy. The logo on this webcam cover was that of NPR, the US public radio network, and that got me thinking about radio station swag. Now, in most cases, radio stations live and die by the ratings, and ratings are, of course, mainly calculated in two ways. Electronic measurement, where a little electronic device with a microphone apparently works out what radio station you're listening to, or diary or telephone measurement, where you have to remember what you've been listening to and tell someone. Recall-based measurement, like diaries or telephone surveys, only measure what someone remembers listening to, not what somebody actually listens to. And this is a small but important distinction, because it means that in a recall-based market, your job is to grow your brand awareness. The better local brand awareness you have, the higher your apparent audience figures will be, irrespective of the quality of the programming, which is a bit annoying, but there we are. One way to achieve good brand awareness is to have a version of your logo that communicates what you do. Calling yourself Eddie might sound cute on the air, but Eddie Radio might work better in your logo. And a strapline underneath, songs that make you feel great all day, at least communicates something about you. And if you slap this version of your logo on swag, makes sense, since it'll reinforce what you're there for. Oh, and you know, how to tune in is probably a good idea. But the secret then is to work out what you can usefully get that logo on, so that they see the logo multiple times a day. There's lots of research showing that you need to communicate a brand 4 or 5 times during someone's buying cycle in order for it to sink in. And that's easier for a mattress, because we buy one every 7 years, than for a radio station, because we tune in every day. So a t-shirt doesn't work. You only see the logo when you put it on, and you don't put it on every day. And a branded cap is just as bad. Skimpy knickers with your radio station brand. I have genuinely worked at a radio station which had a cute radio station mascot printed on some underwear, but I don't think they worked very well before they were burnt. Items that I've been impressed at, though, include shirt sponsorship of the local sports team. That's a winning plan. It highlights your localness, means you appear in the local newspaper every week for nothing as well, and you can conjure it. A reusable coffee cup with the radio station logo on, good for the environment, also good at getting your logo seen multiple times a day, particularly at breakfast. Yes, that webcam cover, something that'll be in your eyeline for hours every day. Car air fresheners, I know, a little tacky, but where's best to remind people you exist at least twice a day in a place with a radio? And pens also work, though I have so many pens I really don't know what to do with them. Make them decent, though, because nobody likes cheap pens. It's also why doing some partnership with local road safety organisations can work well. If I pass your logo every day on my commute, on a sign, well, that's a good thing. And if you're associated with that kind of message, that's probably also good. Maybe you can sponsor the crossings outside local schools as well. And in my bag right now, by the way, a USB charger branded with one radio station brand and a pen branded with another. Now, if only I lived in their transmission area. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening.
Phone calls, social media, SMS, email, codec control and visualization through the same interface. Phone box from Broadcast Bionics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
As Dave Berry starts to prepare for his new Absolute Radio breakfast show, let's remember it was this week last year that he said, bye bye, Capital.
And Bonkers Dizzy Rascal concludes the hashtag Capital Throwback for your Friday morning. Coming up, we've got tunes from Rag and Bone Man, we've got Human, the Rudimental Remix, and then there's something very important that I want to tell you. Don't touch that dial.
Wake up, this is Capital Breakfast.
So that was the tease, and here we go.
That's it for your Friday morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is our last show together on breakfast. And it is my last day here on Capital. George and Lila are still going to be about, though.
Yeah, still going far.
As announced earlier this year, I have decided that the time is right for me to leave the warm embrace of Capital Breakfast, and this morning was my final show as its host. I must say that being the custodian of this radio behemoth for the past 5 years is something that I'll always be extremely proud of. And during my time here at Capital, I have had the privilege of working with some of the best people I ever could have known. At the risk of making this thing like an hour long by naming everybody, you know who you are, and I love you dearly. I've also been very fortunate, I'd like to point out, to have laughed every day that I've been to work. So thank you, George and Lila, for that, and everybody else. And I'd like to thank the trinity of bosses, Ashley, Richard and Stephen, for giving me the opportunity to do so. Going forward, I know that Capital Breakfast is going
to
be...
Farewell to Capital from Dave Berry this week last year. It's 5 years now since TFM started carrying programmes from next door at Metro.
That's the latest. I'm Chris Conway.
The transmitter has been seized. Starting Monday at 6 a.m, a new sound
on TFM.
The new TFM this week in 2013. Its audiences held up for a couple of years after the change, but now a little down on where they were. Radio 4 on Saturday mornings these days is all about Saturday Live, but for many years it was Home Truths, hosted by the man who probably thought he'd never end up on Radio 4, John Peel. That programme began this week 20 years ago.
I'm never going to set foot in your bedroom again. It is your bedroom, you tied it. If you want to live like a pig, go ahead, I don't care. Now, you can only really keep that up for a few weeks, because then they lose homework, they lose important documents.
So what happens to your weekends then?
I leave in the morning, having put the washing in the machine.
So you have a job at the weekend,
Yeah, I tried working during the week, but the dog gets neurotic and eats herself, and it cost me £50 for the vet.
That sounds as though there's a story. And how much of herself is she eating?
Her leg, basically. It's called something or other's lick. It's quite disgusting.
So, I mean, does she, sounds really almost more interesting than your daughter's. I don't wish to be insulting to them. But
the first edition of Home Truths on Radio 4 with John Peel this week in 98. This week in 1976, we were about to enjoy the hottest summer in living memory, and that's maybe why the arrival of this station will forever mean very warm memories, with its American MD and beautiful jingles, Beacon, powered into Wolverhampton.
Another commercial radio station is on the air this morning. It's Beacon Radio, covering Wolverhampton and the Black Country. Beacon is the 19th independent local radio station, and its opening completes the first phase of the development of commercial radio in the United Kingdom. More than 30 million people are now able to hear commercial radio in England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Independent radio news. It's 3 minutes past seven.
Matt Gaidlin, and one of those records that tends to grow on you after you hear it a couple of times. I remember when I first heard that, I didn't like it. It grew on me. I play that for the big boss with the hot sauce this morning. Beacon 303 707.
The heat is on. The summer held...
Mara Smith, Dream On. Morning Report is next with Nikki Chekin and Roger De Freitas. Taking us that way, the Fortunes at 64 Super Gold. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. 7:43 now.
Speed Links, long before they were heard on many commercial stations. Happy 42nd anniversary of the birth of Beacon. It's now one of the free radio stations. And as Douglas said there, the last in the first tranche of stations. So with only half the population covered, little wonder the commercial radio industry struggled for quite a few years. April 1983 now, and in Scotland, the BBC begins to provide local radio broadcasts from its Dumfries and Selkirk studios.
Good morning, this is BBC Radio Tweed, broadcasting to the borders on FM frequencies. Welcome to Tweed Report on Friday the 11th of October with Bernard Wilson and Bob Budgers. Today's weather, a dull and misty...
BBC Radio Tweed, which arrived this week in 83, an opt-out from BBC Radio Scotland. Now, we've had no jingles so far this week, so let's call upon, please, Great North Radio this week in 89.
The Great North East, the greatest place to be with Great North Radio.
The Eagles. Madonna. Michael Jackson, Simply Red, or The Who. Tune in to the new sound of GNR for the best of the 70s, 80s and 90s.
GNR, Great North Radio, launching 29 years ago on the AM frequencies of Metro Radio and Radio Tees. It became magic 9 years later and is now Metro 2 and TFM 2. So, with Virgin Radio launching on FM in London 23 years ago...
Don't you just hate smug DJs on arrogant radio stations? They spend all their time mouthing off about how great they are instead of playing great music. But thankfully, from the 10th of April, you won't have to put up with it.
Commercial radio launching in Cardiff 38 years ago...
And there it is. That is called I Hear You Now from John and Vangelis. The new sound for the capital, CBC 221 metres of the medium wave band. And, of course, that is the record that we've started off with. So, no doubt, in 10 years' time now, we'll be saying, what record did we start off with? And we'll be saying, ah, it was John Evangelis. Good record, that.
And Capital, which was then the UK's largest radio group, winning the battle with Scottish Radio for control of Century 18 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
Thank you, David, and thanks to James, Emma, Roy, and all our guests at the SRA conference, and to Howard Hughes as well. If you want to get in touch, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Stuart Clarkson, or you can email us on news@radiotoday.co.uk. Next week, Trevor Dan returns with our monthly roundtable edition.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.